This is The Bottom Line. I'm Doug Wells, and today we are speaking with Robert Workman, founder and chief creative officer of Goal Zero. His company allows adventurers to charge their cell phones and other gadgets via solar power. Robert describes his company as doing well while doing good, and he's done a lot of both. Last year, with sales of over $30 million, Inc. magazine named Goal Zero the 9th fastest growing privately held company in America. Along the way, Goal Zero also supports nonprofits that bring light and electricity to thousands of people living in villages that previously had no access to power. Robert, thank you for joining us on The Bottom Line.
I'm happy to be here. Thank you for inviting me.
So I wanted to start off in doing a little bit of background research. I went to Goal Zero's website, and frankly, I was surprised. It obviously, you learn about the product, but you also learn about the company and the people. And I found myself inspired. In part, I read the mission statement. And mission statements are usually, we all try to inspire people with our mission statements, but they're usually kind of boring. So share with us what the mission statement is at Goal Zero.
I hope that's funny. I think that we're anything but boring. And I think my friend who works with me and is a part of our board and part of our management team, Joe Adkin, said it better than I could have ever. He said that a lot of companies, they start and then they look for a cause. We were a cause looking for a company.
Interesting.
You know, when he first came into Goal Zero about 4 years ago, we had just started. And it was, and we'll get into how it started, but he came from a private equity group that was really high powered and did all sorts of analysis and spreadsheets. And
it's Sorensen Capital, which is a local firm here, if I'm correct, right?
Yeah. He came from Sorensen, and they're part of, they're one of our partners.
Right.
And so he came in and did a whole bunch of analysis. So Fraser Bullock lent me Joe because I needed some help with some analysis, frankly, and some spreadsheets and sales and stuff. And Joe was kind of in between appointments, and he came in and did his analysis and started telling me all the things why we shouldn't be doing this. He went to the competition, right, what they were doing. And I said, Joe, just shut up. I said, this is more than just analysis. This is a cause. This is something that we have to do because we believe in it. And he worked for a little while, and he said, Robert, are you sure this isn't just a hobby? Is this really a business or is this really a hobby?
Right.
And the greatest thing I ever heard Joe say 4 years later was that if it's not a hobby, it's not a good business.
Nice.
Isn't that nice?
I haven't heard that before. You know, you hear of a lot of businesses that really aren't businesses, they're hobbies.
Yeah.
But the converse is also true. You have to have passion, which I think that gets to. So what was the cause? You really said, hey, this is a cause we have to do. What did you mean by that?
I ran and owned a company called Provocraft for many years, and we had a really quite a good success story. And it was about a 30-year journey, but really intense, about 24 years. And Sorensen Capital came in and talked me into selling my company to them.
Part of it. Right.
Part of it,
right.
Yes, and the majority part of it, actually.
Right.
And they were so kind to me that they let me stay on as a kind of a mentor and let me go out and do some good. So we started a NGO or a humanitarian thing called TIFIE, with T-I-F-I-E. It's an acronym meaning Teaching Individuals and Families Independence Through Enterprise. And we thought—
Teaching them small business skills so that they could—
Exactly. Yeah, because I spent almost 25 years at that point in Asia, and I really saw the Chinese miracle. I was over there when there wasn't much business there. I was one of the first people across the border setting up businesses. And I have friends that were farmers that ended up hiring 10,000 people or 2,000 people. And I saw what entrepreneurship in a good environment could do to change people's lives and raise their incomes, frankly. And so we thought that we would maybe go and do more of that, but more on a humanitarian side. We thought we'd go to the interior of China. And one day I was sitting in Shenzhen, China, and I had a friend with me, and there was four men across the breakfast table that were very interesting. One was a little black guy, one was a white guy, one was Chinese, and one guy looked like he was Middle Eastern. And I thought to myself, that is the weirdest combination of people I've ever seen in China at a breakfast. And so here my friend comes down, and he happened to know the white guy sitting at the table, Ron Zorbach from Salt Lake City. And the little black guy was Phil Malula from DR Congo, living in Salt Lake City. So we were introduced to each other, and Phil and I got to be good friends, as well as Ron. And Phil was over there looking for product that he could take to Congo and maybe start a business to help his people. And I fell in love with his story. That was in 2006. And this is right after I had sold the company to Sorensen. And he invited me to go to Democratic Republic of Congo with him. And so my son Swan and I went over. We fell in love with the culture and the people. And we thought, this is where we needed to be.
Okay. If you're just joining us, I'm speaking with Robert Workman, founder and chief creative officer of Goal Zero. And how does Goal Zero tie into the sustainable business in the Congo and Typhi?
So anyway, we went over there and we thought, okay, we're going to start these businesses. And I'll tell you a thought that I had when I got over there. It was such a disaster because I had never been in a more poor country. And so anything that you can do there is needed. It's overwhelming almost. We can't, unless you're there and really living there, you cannot understand the poverty that other parts of the world go through every single day, living hand to mouth. Anyway, we started some of these little businesses, and they started really well. Inevitably, though, as soon as cash started happening, corruption set in, and money was stolen. Business would fail. And about halfway through this journey of 6 years, I was over on the ground for almost 6 years, in and out, a significant time there with others, of course. But halfway through, I was out in the bush, and I looked up to my God, and I said, God, I am not going to do this anymore. These people are corrupt. They deserve what they get, and I'm done.
Wow. Yeah.
And immediately, this impression came to me that said, if not you, who? If not now, when? Anyway, we were not being successful in starting these businesses. But we identified the needs of the people and what we would call four ground zero needs. That every human that is on this earth, whether they're rich or whether they're poor, in a modern world needs. Those four items are portable power, or power, electricity, shelter, food, and water. So we put our heads together and said, you know, we're not very good, really, at starting businesses in a country where we don't understand the culture, and they don't understand us. But what we're really good at is making stuff. And if we can make stuff that these people can use their culture to help them out of poverty, then maybe that would work. And so Goal Zero was born. We tackled the first product, or the first ground zero need, which was
the power
electricity,
was
the power,
right.
Electricity.
And so now, that was really the driver for coming up with Goal Zero, is how do you provide power to these villages that are really cut off from the rest of the world.
Exactly.
And I want to circle back. You mentioned Fraser Bullock and Sorensen Capital and their investors in Goal Zero. Another investor you have in Goal Zero is Mercado Partners. Alan Hall is one of the general partners there. He wrote an article in Forbes magazine about you. He writes occasionally for Forbes magazine. And I'm paraphrasing the title, but it was essentially Doing Well by Doing Good. And it was a glowing article about your initiative and what you're doing. And it really brings up another question is, can you do well by society and still do well by investors? Is it an either or can you do both?
Today's business model has to be both. You cannot be sustainable if it's not both. I believe that there's a consciousness in the world today that's growing stronger. It's a trend. It's not just a blip on the map. Whatever it was, the tipping point or whatever, people want to do the right thing. Sometimes they don't know how. Now, when I say people, and of course you got some scoundrels out there, but you look at the youth today, you can talk about them in badly if you want, but I don't see it as much as I see a movement in the youth to want to do good.
So in one of the articles I read about you, you told the story about folks in Haiti after an earthquake that had to choose. They could either get one of your Goal Zero products and get portable power, or they could get a bag of rice to feed their family. And where I thought the article was going was the regret that they couldn't get the Goal Zero product. But in actuality, they actually chose the solar cell charger over a bag of rice, which was food for their family. Why do you think they made the choice that they did?
Okay, I don't want to sound callous or flippant, because there's always going to be other points of view. But remember that I've lived with the poorest of poor.
Mm-hmm.
I've seen situations worse than Haiti, believe it or not.
Which is pretty rough.
Pretty rough.
Yeah.
I've seen it worse. People somehow can get food, but they can't get a sustainable power, which gives them an opportunity that food won't. You feed a person for a day with a bag of rice. You have the potential to feed a person for a year, 2 year, 3 year with the right tool. So, for example, in Congo, and same thing with Haiti, what happens with all those cell phones that people somehow buy? Their battery dies. They can't get hold of their family. When you introduce a portable power unit, what happens? They're never out of power. In fact, they actually have excess, so what do they do with it? They start a business. The first business that always gets started is charging cell phones.
Really?
Yeah. The second one is some kind of cooler or education opportunity. So you introduce light into a little hut. Now, all of a sudden, the kids can study at night.
Mm-hmm.
So I got to tell you this funny story, and it does relate to Haiti in a roundabout way. I'll come back to this. So we did what was called Light a Village, where we had a central battery charging station of 12,000 kilowatts, or 12,000 watts, 12 kilowatts. People come in and charge their batteries, big 100 amp hour batteries, take it back to their home, and they have a whole electrical system. So the second home that we put in, we came back about a week later. There were 50 kids in a room. How big is this room? 12 by 12?
Pretty tiny.
Maybe?
Yeah.
It's pretty tiny. 50 kids watching this old-fashioned TV and the news channel glued to the TV, and the guy was charging them just a few francs. It was a movie house.
Right.
Now, isn't that incredible?
Yeah.
So going back to the Haiti situation, I think it's about the tool, that they could see that that was going to enhance their life a lot longer, and they would have a lot more opportunity to lift themselves. A bag of rice only feeds them for a day or two.
Right. So we start off, one of your goals is the product has to serve both the poorest of the poor and the richest of the rich. Let's talk about the other side of the equation. How are people using Goal Zero's product on the richest of the rich? People here in the USA, where we're fortunate, we don't have to worry about clean water, we don't have to worry about food, we've got that covered. How are people using your product here in the U.S.?
When they're off-grid. So everybody's off-grid sometime. Have you ever been in a situation where your red light comes on in your phone and you about...
You panic.
You panic. And you think, I'm going to die. Or you're trying to do your work at an airport and everybody else has got the plug,
right,
and you don't get it.
Right.
And or it's that sort of thing. So we do that. Then we have some really cool products that... For us, they're just fun. Like we're introducing an REI, I think this is, I can let this go, a new Rockout solar-powered Bluetooth speaker. And so this is our third generation coming up. Every kid, even myself, when I'm working in the garden, that is going to be with me.
Right.
But in the third world, what kind of entertainment do they really have? Music. Yep. And beer. Beer right. is alive and well, but right. music. So these little speakers, powered from the sun, they can play, and it's cool sound. We call it black noise or something like that, some funny name like that. But anyway, they now can take that and entertain themselves. So poor is a poor, rich is a rich.
Right. Yeah, I think many of our listeners will be surprised because, you know, the solar cells are really now just coming into mainstream where people are starting to use them. The technical solutions are there. The durability is there. And now commercial solar cells are approaching what's called grid parity, which is about 20% efficiency.
Right.
And what surprised me is I went on Amazon.com and I looked up Goal Zero, and of course they carry your products. But under solar chargers, there were 536 products to choose from. So the world gets incredibly competitive incredibly quickly. And do you think, I think a lot of entrepreneurs starting a company like yours might say, hey, I'd love to have this cause that's bigger than the company, but gee, my business is just too competitive.
I think they overanalyze it. I go back to Joe Atkins. You know, when we started this business, he went and looked at Duracell. He looked at all of the battery companies that have rechargeable stuff.
Right.
And they were a half to a third of the pricing that we were going to hit the market with.
For a lot of people, that would be it. I got a big competitor, great yeah. brand name, great distribution. They're selling a similar product for half the price.
Yeah, so I'm going to teach you something. And I would teach the all entrepreneurs the same thing. I like to think in threes. And so I teach our product people what I call the three T's, which are tools, textures, and treats. The tool is what it does. Anybody can do that. Maybe the quality will be different, but anybody can make something that is a tool. The texture on it is the sex appeal. Is people say, I don't know what that thing is, but by golly, I'm going to look at it. That is sexy.
Right.
So that's the texture that you've got to nail. And the last part is the treats. Once they pick that up, they're going to look at that and say, oh my gosh, these people even thought of that. And they thought of that. Oh my gosh, they thought of that.
Right.
And so I think that a lot of inventors or entrepreneurs will get to stage one, which is the tool. And I think therein lies the competitiveness of it, of the world. And you're right. Anything, a glass, a water, why is it that people's water can come out of nowhere and just beat the socks out of Coca-Cola? What is it? It starts with a D, Dasani water or something. I can't remember the name of it.
Dasani.
Yeah, Dasani. That's right. Why is it that they can come out, someone with a cause, and just beat the crap out of Coca-Cola, who's a monster, because they added some cool stuff to it? The tool was a bottle of water.
Right.
The treat was a cause, right? The texture was a different shape.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the graphics and all of that.
Well, and their bottle feels different in your hand.
Yeah.
However they do that.
They did a really nice job. But the treat was, in my opinion, they had a story that they're unrelenting telling.
Right.
And that goes back to what we talked about earlier. There is a movement in this world to do good. So Alan Hall, my real quote is, do good, get good.
Okay.
Do good, get good. It's magic. You can't do good and not get good. It just comes to you. It's
right.
free. The universe just shoves it at you.
If you're just joining us, our guest this morning is Robert Workman, founder and chief creative officer of Goal Zero. Your parents started, it was called Robert's Craft Stores, right?
Provocraft.
Okay, but yeah. They had retail stores with
Robert's. That was
Robert's.
Yeah, that was what I started.
Okay, okay.
Yeah.
So you took over Provocraft in 1976.
Yep.
Your mom and dad started that business. I love those three, the three T's. Are those some lessons that you learned from your parents, or what do you think you were able to bring to the table as an entrepreneur because you grew up in an entrepreneurial family?
Well, I didn't grow up in that family. My dad and my mother were divorced when I was 6 years old. So my dad grew up, was down in Provo, Utah, and he had his wife, Thea, and he started this Provo craft business. I grew up in northern Wyoming on a farm in a ranching community. I believe that, but my mother was an artist and very creative. But I learned lessons on the farm to get by and to fix and be creative and to figure it out. I had a friend one time tell me, and it's always worked, he said, if there's a problem, an emergency problem, that you got to fix something, it's probably, the fix is probably within 3 feet of you, within your reach. Just be creative and don't put up walls. Just look around, that the fix is right there for you. It's never failed me.
Wow.
Never.
I mean, I can see that working on a farm, but in the business world, it's a little more difficult.
Sure. It's a little more difficult for sure because there's a lot more movement. But the principle is the same. The principle of looking around us and seeing what we needed, Goal Zero was born. Now, the complicated part of it is the discipline and attracting the right team that has the skills to build a really great electronic product and the right talent to make something really sexy. That's the texture, right?
Right.
And then the combination, we put the treats in.
Right. Now talk to us about building the brand. I heard somebody talk about Goal Zero probably a year ago, and they were talking about how you got into Costco. But what about the other retail locations, or maybe if you want to elaborate on the Costco?
When we first started in 2009 to launch our first product, portable power, solar, and all of that was really just in its infancy. There was a few brands out there that did $5 million or whatever, but the crowd, the consumer, really didn't get it yet. And we had to tell the story and tell the story and tell the story. And unless we actually showed them, it wasn't instinctual when they went to the shelf. This is solar power? How was it? You know, it was kind of, they had to think. And if you have to think too long as a consumer, you don't buy it.
Right.
So Costco, we got, they were so kind to us. We started local here in Utah, and we just knocked it out of the ballpark. So we got national attention really fast. What Costco did for us in the beginning was help us to get in front of up to 25 million people per year on that one-on-one contact. It's a 10-day roadshow. I think the first full year we did like 850 shows.
Wow.
And so we looked at it more as a marketing opportunity with some cash back. Costco, we were very careful what we put into Costco, because we have other great partners too. And so Costco will get a different mix or a different kit or end-of-life product. But they have been critical for us. Now, going forward, we've had to refine it. Remind me to talk to you about the 3 Ds, because that's really important for any entrepreneur.
Well, we have time now. Let's talk about the 3 Ds.
Again, you know, I think in threes because it's easy for me to remember. So I call it, the 3 Ds is deflect, disassociate, and discover. So any entrepreneur, and this will go back to Costco question and how we work with our other partners. So deflecting to us means that we focus on the things that give us some success, especially in an entrepreneur type thing. So we keep wanting to recreate that, whether it's a product, whether it's an event, whether it's whatever it is, because it was so darn good, we're going to go back there and do that again. Well, what happens? Every product has a life cycle. Every customer has ups and downs. But if we're stuck in that first stage, if we don't deflect those emotions, because it's always about emotion. If you love a product, it's emotional. You love your shirt, it's emotional. A shirt's a shirt. It's a tool. It doesn't think. You think, right?
Right.
So what happens is many entrepreneurs and businesses, they get stuck in this product or this experience, and they can't get out of it. So they keep trying to recreate it, make it better. Oh, this thing will never stop being popular. You've got to deflect those emotions. And this is then you can disassociate the emotions and step back away from the business or away from the product. Guess what? Your competition is already at the disassociation stage. They don't care about any emotions about your product. They already know about it. They're copying it. They're tore it apart. Maybe they've improved upon it. They found out how to make it cheaper. They have no R&D cost in it. They're beyond you. So now they're at this stage here. They're either going to jump ahead of you because they've learned from you or copy you. You've got to be there. You've got to disassociate. So deflect until you can disassociate. Once you can do that, then you get to discover what's new. But if you ever get stuck back in the beginning, you never get to discover the next step.
I think it takes courage and it takes a leader to do that. And I think Apple Computers is famous for saying, you know what, we don't care if we cannibalize our own products. If we don't, our competitors are going to. But how do you build a culture that thinks the way that you're thinking and is where it's not you driving it, but it's actually the whole team driving that? How do you build that culture?
It starts with a leader. There's no question about it. But then you have to instill the culture. And you have to preach it, and you have to protect it every single day. The team that's at Goal Zero now, I can walk out, Joe can walk out, we could get hit by a car. They're going to protect that culture. And they're going to be able to stand up to the board and say, yeah, we're going to do this anyway. I don't care what the spreadsheet says. This is the right thing to do. And to your point, if we're going to cannibalize, let's kill ourselves.
Right.
You know, I'm not going to wait for the other person because surely they will. Someone will kill that product someday. Now, there is a little trick to it, and what is the right thing? Because there's economics involved. So how do you introduce the next product? How do you end of life the old product? Those are pretty technical things that you got to pay attention to, because you just can't always make great product if you're not paying attention to the life cycles, to the distribution channels. Those are all really important.
Very good. All right. Well, Robert, thank you for joining us. I've enjoyed hearing about your journey building Goal Zero, and as well as the broader conversation that we've had.
Oh, thank you. A pleasure to be here.
Our guest this morning has been Robert Workman, founder and chief creative officer of Goal Zero. The Bottom Line was recorded at KCPW Studios at Library Square. It was produced by Ross Champlis with technical support by Jesse Ellis and Tyler Ford. Thank you for your help, gentlemen. I'm Doug Wells. Join us next week on The Bottom Line.